This is Mame Warren. It's the 18th of September, 1996. I'm still with George Goodwin. This is tape two. Before we go on to something else, you were just saying that you talked to Andy Young and Jimmy Carter about their experiences here. Can you share that with me, what they had
to say? Both said they were very positive. I forget which years they were here.
Carter was here in 72.
Yeah.
I don't know about Andy Young.
I would have talked to him after 72, although he was a client of ours at Goodman, Georgia. Andy was here more recently, or maybe Atlanta. But I think the mock convention is well regarded nationwide now, because it hasn't been allowed to be messed up.
Do you come back for it ever?
I was here for, I've been here for one.
I thought it was thrilling.
Yeah.
I thought it was absolutely thrilling. I was there for every single minute of it. I had goosebumps through the whole thing.
I remember Senator Hollins of South Carolina was the speaker when I was back here for it. I think it coincided with maybe our 50th reunion.
Well, now, one of the things that I found myself thinking about while I was at the mock convention, and certainly they were talking about it, was how thrilled the students were this year because they finally got to have a Republican convention and they didn't have to act anymore. And so I found myself thinking, oh boy, that'd be really intriguing to see these people trying to pretend to be Democrats. But in your day, they were having...
I think we had a public 50-50 split.
You think that the student body was...
I always give the other guy the benefit of the doubt.
But you were having to do a Republican convention.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about that idea of having to pretend you're something you're not?
I don't think it makes any difference. Well, you don't really get into that side of the convention. The two sides to it, or were, I presume it hasn't changed that much. One was the research and the need to be as accurate as you could as to what will the Georgia delegation do in situation A, situation B, situation C. And home over Christmas, you ask six or eight people questions like that. Of course, in those days, there was no doubt what Georgia was going to do. Georgia was going to vote Democratic in situations A, B, C, D, E through Z. Now it's a doubtful state. And I think those who put on the convention managed to inculcate students in the need for dedicated accuracy in that process. And then the other aspects of it are the fun parts, the humorous delegates, the banners, and then I think the speaker, the visiting speaker, and the school has been able to attract some very good ones. I can't remember who was the speaker during my freshman year, but that's asking my memory to go back a long way.
It sure is. Well, now, you know, when I met you a few months ago, you told me a pretty remarkable story about how Washington and Lee had made an impact on your life. of the speaking tradition.
Oh.
You think you can tell that story succinctly? And
yes. One of the stories that was pounded into us when we were here was the speaking tradition and the story of the still unidentified younger student who took some time out to take Robert Parker DeRamus around the campus back in the teen years or early 20s or something like that. And it came simply because the fellow spoke to her. Well, I have, ever since, I have found it fairly easy just to say, how do you do to somebody you meet? You don't know them, they're going that way, you're going this way, and how do you know? Good afternoon. In elevators, or wherever. So in 1947, I was engaged in investigating voting frauds in Telfair County, Georgia, which were at the root of a crazy time in Georgia history when we had for a few days three governors and for 68 days two governors. And the story turned on some votes that we found in the bottom of the state capitol, Georgia, then Atlanta, that indicated that a group of people in the home county of Herman Talmadge, who was one of the claimants for governor, had voted in alphabetical order. And we discovered this on a Friday. And on Saturday, I had to go to Telfair County and try to find those people. Well, fortunately, during some preliminary investigation on the story earlier in the week, I had gone to make a telephone call at a little railway station in Helena, Georgia. And I spoke to a man in overalls. How do you do? And I made my phone call and came back out. And he was standing by my car, and he said, I know why you are here. So he said, yeah, they tried to get me to vote for Herman, and I wouldn't do it. And so we talked for a while. And the call that I had made to the office resulted in my being called back to the office because we were going to have a conference on the story the next day. And so he gave me his name. His name was Dan Browning. And so I went back to the office. And then it was subsequent that we found these alphabetical names on a voting list, a voter's list. And so I had a contact. And I called him from Atlanta, and I said, do you know these people? And he said, yeah, that one you just mentioned is dead. So I said, I'll see you in the morning at 7 o'clock. So I left Atlanta early of a Saturday morning and went to him at the railroad station. He ran a junkyard nearby. And he got in the car, and he knew where all those people who were still in the county, who showed up as having voted that day, lived. And he led me through the back roads of this county. And we were able to do some 20 interviews in maybe 4 hours. And then I got a call from the paper to get back, to start dictating the story immediately. It was going to run for Sunday. We'd thought it was going to be later than that. And so there was no doubt that without Dan Browning, we would have never been able to confirm that some of the people listed were dead, that others had moved away. And we were able to talk to relatives of those who had moved, and they told us where. so-and-so live nowadays out of the voting district. And so we had a pretty good start, Sunday's paper. And it was a light year for Pulitzer Prizes, and it won the Pulitzer Prize in 1948 for stories reported on in 1947 in the category of local reporting. And you can imagine, for a newspaperman, it changed his life. I was at the activities marking the 75th birthday of the Pulitzer Prizes a few years ago. And I forget who the speaker was. It may have been Russell Baker. But he looked out at the audience and all these various winners and former winners and the arts and as well as journalism were there. And he started his speech. He says, "Well, I know the first three words of all of your obituaries."
That's great. That's wonderful. And true. And true. That's and so the speaking tradition, I just, you know, as I walk around this campus and take pleasure in the speaking mm-hmm. tradition, I think your story is so powerful to let them know why they're doing it. So I'm so glad to have that.
You never know. You never know what it might lead to. I dare say some practice of the speaking tradition has led to marriages. Lord knows what else.
Now, you mentioned a long time ago that the SPE House, the SPEs, are the most generous.
SPE.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know what you're talking about. I don't know one fraternity to the next on that issue. What I know is that the alumni of this college and this university is incredibly generous. Why do you think, what is the driving force behind that?
A measure of it has to be Gaines for the 30 years that he was here. Huntley, I didn't know as well, although he and I were here at about the same time. He apparently had an ability to stir students. I think one part of the answer is Washington and Lee has an unduly high percentage per capita of people in who's who in America. And recently it was shown a surprising number of chief executive officers. You get into who's who in America in part by being a politician. A lot of newspapermen in there, through, of course, the Pulitzer Prize people are there. A lot of teachers, college presidents, all of which we kind of turn out. A lot of preachers, too. But I expect part of the answer, the reason Washington Lee people are generous, is that Washington Lee people are pretty successful financially in their careers. May relate to that the family had money and thus they were able to come here.
They can give their money a lot of places.
I think it harks, excuse me. Let me finish this.
Sure.
I think some of it may have harked to, in 4 years in an all-male environment, you learned how to get along with men. If you didn't, there was no place to hide. And there's some intangible aspect of that. And that's about as far as I can go, or as I care to go, because I don't want to offend all these terrific women that we now have here. But there was something in that. And I don't mean the silly business like at BMI or the Citadel. But being in an all-male atmosphere, and one that's charged pretty much with campus politics, and, liberal arts, a law school, somehow that all adds in. So I think these fellows, a lot of cases it's been luck. Gaines deals with it. He points out that both George Washington and Robert E. Lee married the wealthiest women of their eras, and they urged his boys to go and do likewise. And he tells that delightful story when he was the bottom teacher at the University of Mississippi until he married the dean's daughter. But I think also there is that, I think our isolated location has something to do with it, or semi-isolated. Now you've got available all the TV channels of the world, but as recently as 5 years ago, in Lexington, Virginia, you did well to get one TV channel. So somehow there weren't the distractions, and there are these meaningful physical moments. Sitting in Lee Chapel, coming out of the chapel and blinking in the sunlight and seeing that line of buildings up top of the lawn. Looking at those buildings at night. Looking down between the columns and the buildings, down the line of them at night. Those are sort of special impressions. Oh, the footbridge. You can walk on that footbridge on a spring evening when the fireflies are down over the creek, and you can have a conversation with General Lee. I think all of those experiences are like an experience my wife and I have had many times, most recently this summer, standing on the floor of Zion National Park, looking up at the towering peaks above us. You feel small, but you feel a sense of majesty around you. And I think that definitely impacted our people, still does. That's about as close an answer as I can give you.
That's about as good an answer as I've gotten.
most of us look back and realize that it was our years here that really shaped us. Of course, you're there in the shaping time of 18 to 22. You learn about whiskey, you may learn about women for the first time. You learn that a world you didn't run into in high school. And a very important thing. You either proved or failed to prove that you could stand on your own. Because you were totally free. There were just those three rules. And anything else, you might get your knuckles slapped. But those were the big ones. So it probably is a collection of a lot of intangibles. Probably some of our closest male friendships are developed in those years too. Best I can do with it.
Well, that's pretty good. My last question is, I'd like to know how you responded to the whole concept of co-education.
At first, I was opposed to it and didn't know why. And then late in the controversy, I began to realize that there might be something in that male bonding theory that I was sharing with you a moment ago. And I'd like to go off the record a minute on one thing, if I may.
Let me just stop it?
Yeah. So I think you would have to say that I was among those alumni that were certainly not wildly opposed, but somewhat opposed to the idea of co-education. But I must tell you a story. It involves our granddaughter, Emily, who is now 18. When she was no more than 4, her brother, who was 2 years older than she, and had a Washington and Lee shirt with the year 1999 on it, was lording it over her, saying, "I can go to Washington and Lee and you can't, because you're a girl." She said, without a moment's hesitation, my wife heard this. He said, "That's all right, I'll go to Sweetbriar." This kid's 4 years old. Well, she's no more than 6, probably nearer to 5, when the co-educational issue is resolved. And her father was telling her about it, that Washington Lee is now open to women. And she looked up and smiled and said, "Now I won't have to go to Sweetbriar."
That's
great. Well, realize we can't control the sex of our children and grandchildren. And so now I'm a strong advocate of co-education here. I told that story to Jim Balancy, who was chairman of the trustees at the time of the row. And he said he used it in some speeches, was pretty good effect. Because, of course, it is true. If I would be very pleased if my granddaughter were to elect Washington Lee. I don't think she will. She's hoping to get into Brown on early decision. Well, failing in that, she's got around Colorado College. I don't think it's anything we can press. But I thought that little story really was the summation of the coeducational issue.
That's pretty good. Now, when the vote happened, were you still opposed by the time the vote took place?
About as I told you, because her comment about now I won't have to go to Sweetbriar comes after the vote, but it suddenly brought me up short. I said, wait a minute, you got two grandchildren here, now you got four. There were two of them that much younger. Because Ballinger was still chairman when I shared the story with him.
So what do you think now?
As I said, I'm an advocate of it. I think it was good.
But you're here a lot. You see these women. What's
Pardon?
You come back on campus a lot.
Yeah. Where else can you get a pretty girl to say hi to you at my age?
What was your experience of the first year or two? Were you here the transition happened?
Oh, sure. And in fact, well, I can't be sure because we come in the fall sometimes and in the spring, and I can't remember, but I think it was a class agents weekend, which would have been a fall time, that I shared that story with Ballinger. So it was probably the fall after their action in the spring. I don't know.
Is there anything more you want to share?
Pardon?
In your notes there, is there anything more you want to share?
I do want you to click the machine on
that. Okay, well, I want to thank you. This has just been fabulous.
Let me.
We're back, and we're going to turn the tape over because we have a fancy dress story.